It's all about the sound. Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, Carolina. Don't you wanna get down and dirty? It's Texas, I'm thirsty.
This is the SEC Spin.
SEC Spin.
With Jay Ruark and Brian Daniel.
Welcome back to SEC Spin Radio. This is Season 2, Episode 8 with Jay and BD. Glad, grateful for everyone to be with us this week for this, the 8th episode. Jay, how you doing this week?
Another week, another disappointing UK loss, but more news in the U of L scandal.
We could always count on the Louisville Cardinals.
Yeah.
Before we get into that, tell me how the house building's going.
I was supposed to close on this house September 21st. Okay. It is October 22nd.
True.
And they want us to close tomorrow night. I've never heard of closing on a house on a Friday night after hours.
It happens.
Whatever. I doubt
it
we close.
Saturdays, they'll do it Friday night, whatever it takes.
At least I'm now not having to walk across the street every morning to shower before work, so that's an improvement.
Oh, you haven't had water.
We've had water, we just didn't have gas to heat the water.
All right. So no cold shower from Mad J.
That's no cold. Well, I needed one after that Kentucky-Auburn game. But
before we get into that, we got new disclosures for the University of Louisville thing. Now, on Episode 7 last week, got into that a little bit, and at the time, you had corroboration with Jaquan Lyle, I think, was the only one, and I think there were some pictures with Montrell Harrell that had been circulated. And of course, you had the book, and it seems like in the interim week, ESPN's Outside the Lines and some others have done a little digging and turned up some additional sources that have been confirmed by Terry Rozier, Antonio Blakeney. I never can say his name right. Is it
Blakeney? I say Blakeney, but I don't know if that's right.
I may be right. Maybe right.
It's a tough one either way.
That's right. And I don't know if you guys saw, and Jay, you probably saw the Outside the Lines feature that, so, I mean, these guys, well, what do you got to say?
I think Rozier kind of coming out and confirmed was a little surprising to me just because, I mean, he was one of the Louisville, he was kind of a fan, I'm not going to say a fan favorite, but he was kind of a big Louisville guy. And I don't know. I mean, part of me, I guess it, for me,
he was Russ Smith before Russ Smith. It was Peyton Siva. It was Terry Rozier, Peyton Siva, and then Russ Smith. Right.
That's yeah. And I'm just surprised that some of those guys were willing to throw under the bus as strong because these are very serious allegations. But at the same time, you know, you kind of have that sense of brotherhood and that sense of, you know, this is our team. I'm going to protect my coaches. I'm going to protect my fellow teammates. I was a little bit surprised that many came out. But I guess it speaks to to me, that makes the whole case that much stronger against Louisville, that those guys were willing to come out and do that. And I guess in one way, I admire them for coming out and being willing to be honest, if they truly are being honest. But at the same time, you know, that's not going to win you any popularity contest. It's just obviously those guys are not, their careers are over. You would wonder if their careers weren't over, if they would be coming out and saying that, because, you know, a lot of GMs and the pros do not like the airing the dirty laundry, so to speak. So it'd be interesting if those guys, now Blakeney's a little bit different story. He's definitely going to come out and clear his name, or I think it was smart of him to come out and admit it. Clear his name. He's getting ready to start his college career and then go on his pro career. I think it's a little bit different. You know, if Rozier was a guy that was a steady NBA player, I'd be surprised if he would come out and say anything at all. Just because you just don't want to be that guy that's airing your dirty laundry in the locker room. I think it would be interesting to see if his career wasn't over if he would come out and say it. But again, I think it just really is a testament to the fact that something was definitely going on. I mean, to the extent, I don't know, but it's very, very hard to believe that it wasn't to the exact extent that she claims.
So just to recap, what happened from 2010 to 2015? So you're looking at a five-year run. I think there was $40,000 exchanged. What they found now, they found wire transfers, evidence of that. They found text messages. The Katina Powell, who is the person at the center of this scandal, kept a very detailed journey that kept a very detailed journal that the Outside the Lines report, they actually showed it. And they said, well, why'd you do this? She said, well, because I knew one of these days I was going to bring it out and I would be questioned. Well, of course. Right. But why you really did it was, of course, to make some money. That's always what the accused have against the accusations is, well, this person's just after money. What's kind of funny about this is she said, well, yeah, that's why I'm doing it. I need the money. Well, and basically saying I'm getting too old for my craft, and so I've got to find another source of income. The whole thing
is business has really slowed down for me.
Oh, boy. It's just all ugly. Now, she maintains that both of her daughters, which is bad enough, were 18 and older. The original story, initially, they were not 15, saying that. Right? Yeah, they were saying they were 15, which, gosh, I hope not. But that's really hard to believe.
Because then it gets into not only was it already a legal issue, then you start getting into serious stuff that people could go to jail for a long, long time. I mean, prostitution is one thing, but underage prostitution is a whole different ball game.
Yeah.
My take on it is, number one, I have a hard time truly believing that Patino, if every detail of all of this is true, which is really looking like it is true, I really do have a hard time believing that Patino would be dumb enough to allow things like wire transfers and that kind of thing and really have his hand in the pot. And I mean, a lot of players have come out, not necessarily from Louisville, but players that have been on recruiting trips and say, you know, I'm with the head coach and we have dinner or whatever. And then after that, he leaves and then we're with whoever. And that's when all the partying starts and the coach is never with us, which is, you know, kind of how I would imagine it to be, you know, all the recruiting trips I went on. That's how it was for us.
me too.
All my dental recruiting trips, it was crazy. But the interesting thing is actually I kind of applaud Rick Bozic, I don't know how you say his last name, the big Louisville writer for the Courier-Journal, really kind of came out and did a timeline and basically said it's not surprising in the fact that there was such a pressure to get these players in, basically saying Cal's beating up on you in-state. I mean, where are you at this point back in 2010? The rumors are you're not winning anything. You've been bounced out of the first. I think they got bounced out of the first round and second round, back to back years. Got bounced out of the Big East tournament, back to back years. I do believe so. Things were not really going well at Louisville. Not only had UK beat them, pretty handily there for a couple years. So the pressure was really on to bring in these recruits, and then this is when this started. So really the timeline that he kind of panned out and then said, okay, so this was 2010, boom, 2012, we're in the Final Four, 2013, we win the national championship. The timeline that he painted, I was actually really surprised because he's a big, big Louisville supporter. So kudos to him to really, I mean, that's a hard, had to be a hard article to write, being the big Louisville writer for the Courier-Journal. I bet Pat Forty was just freaking out when
MIA.
MIA. Still hasn't commented on the whole thing, to my knowledge, which is fascinating. If this was Kentucky, Pat Forty would have an article out daily. But I do applaud Rick Bozic for kind of coming out and painting that timeline. I mean, it just makes sense. And I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure that out, but it's interesting that he painted that timeline.
There's differing positions on what will happen to Patino, and there's differing positions on what happens from here. Seth Greenberg says no way he makes it through, and some other people have said that, and I've seen some Jay Billis comments said that they really didn't think that he knew. I think Coach Patino is going to have plausible deniability. So, and Jurich was interesting. The president of the university supported Jurich, but he didn't mention Patino as someone he would support. So Patino wants McGee, the guy that was making the arrangements, to kind of take the hit. And I think the president wants Patino to take the hit. They can replace a basketball coach at this point. What does this have to do with the SEC? I was talking with a friend of mine that's a big Louisville fan this past week, and he said probably happened. In fact, I don't have any doubt that it happens. With everything's being written, probably did. Whether Patino knew about it, of course, this guy said there's no way he could know. He wouldn't doubt either way if he knew or if he didn't know. But he said, don't think for a minute that this is an isolated incident. And I don't know about that, but It is hard to believe that this is, that the University of Louisville is the only place that something like this may be going on.
Well, and I'm not gonna say there's not a whole lot of shady stuff that goes on in recruiting from the Pac-12 to the
this
ACC,
would be
the SEC.
Really shady, though.
but to have prostitution going on that is being paid for by the coaching staff, that to me is a little bit hard to believe. Now, are there? You know, Tennessee had this a few years ago where the what do they call it? The recruit girls or whatever they are.
The host squad
or the vol, whatever it was.
Vol squad.
Whatever the case may be. I mean, it's fairly obvious what those girls were doing. Were they getting paid by the coaches to do that? I never saw any
of
that.
Or they friends of UT football.
Exactly. So, I mean, there is a... To say that this specifically is not an isolated incident, that's a strong statement. Just because you cannot automatically assume that paid prostitution by the coaching staff is going on at every university or several other universities, and then especially possible underage prostitution going on being paid by the coaching staff at other universities. I mean, that is just if there is, then the NC. I mean, that just might as well. The NCAA may as well just completely cave. I mean, seriously.
Well, they might.
I mean, I can't really imagine that. But I do agree that there are some shady workings going on everywhere in every sport, and I do not doubt that at all. But to say that is a strong statement. I really hope that that's not true. Well, I mean, it's one thing to pay a player to come to the university or give his mom a car or something like that. Man, prostitution—that's a different. That's a different animal.
Yeah, it's one. You know, academic fraud is one thing, which I think is totally antithetical to the spirit of college athletics. Having your picture taken with a recruit when you're not supposed to be with the recruit is another thing. Paying a player to pay—that's been, it's probably been going on since there's been scholarships.
Right.
I'd say, not to excuse it, but that's getting an edge on the game, and you know, you get a hand slap, and the severity of that is in question. This is another level. You're right. I do think that there are things going on that would probably make your skin crawl. Maybe not as much, but really close. So,
well, the last thing I'll say about it with regards to what does this have to do with the SEC, this is going to set the precedent. Whatever ends up happening, this is going to set the precedent for things that happen in the future. Worst case scenario for Louisville, they somehow do tie everything to the coaching staff and the money actually did come from the coaching staff or from a fund that is the coaching staff's. I could see Louisville getting something similar to a death threat or the death penalty, where they are on several years of probation, several years of postseason ban, and Patino gets fired, and the athletic director gets fired. That would be the worst case scenario for Louisville, and then that would set the precedent. Any sort of scandal sexually related on recruiting trips for Alabama, Tennessee, Georgia, Kentucky, whatever it is, boom, automatic. You're getting the same thing that Louisville's going to get. So that's what it could have the effect on the SEC, is that if there is anything like this that's going on, they need to clean it up now, because, I mean, this is going to set the precedent.
Well, a couple things. This may be criminal and not NCAA, and the NCAA doesn't have subpoena power. So I don't know what they'll be able to do. You're listening to SEC Spin Radio with JMBD. We're talking about the University of Louisville scandal, and that'll be a story that we'll follow. Let's spin it back to week 7.
Okay.
So just as a recap, we had several games last week, of course. Auburn 30, Kentucky 27. Ole Miss at Memphis. Ole Miss goes down to Memphis 24-37. That game not really close. Alabama at Texas A&M. That's the game that we featured. Alabama wins that one 41-23. Vanderbilt at South Carolina. That was, that we thought Vanderbilt may get an SEC win on the road there. It did not happen. Vanderbilt loses 19-10. Florida LSU, 35-28 Tigers. And then that Georgia-Missouri game, which Georgia did win at home, 9-6. So let's start with Auburn-Kentucky. The note I've got here is that inconsistent UK lets a mile marker opportunity get by them.
Well, I mean, again, typical Kentucky football. Auburn statistically, top to bottom was the worst statistical team in the SEC, the entire conference, going into that game. Basically starting the backup quarterback, The opening drive, Kentucky gave up 5 third down conversions. Shaun White had 140 yards in the first quarter passing. Made him look like a Heisman Trophy candidate. It was a terrible start on defense. Offense was a little bit anemic there to start. We had the Toles throws the god-awful interception in the end zone. I mean, he telegraphed it the whole way. You know, again, just one of those stories where Kentucky completely makes the other team look like all-stars and Heisman Trophy candidates, and then they do not pull through. But again, second half, fourth quarter, the play calling by Kentucky on that that last drive was unbelievable. The fact that they were driving down the field on Auburn, the short passing game was wide open. I mean, every play, and Kentucky was in a rhythm. First down, they get to second and three. They get the 7 yards on first down, second and three, no reason to run. You've got under a minute to play. Yeah, you were getting close, but don't run the ball. Just keep throwing the short pass. Auburn was dropping back in a zone, giving you 5 to 7 yards. You need 3 yards for a first down. They run it up the middle, don't get anything. Third and three, just get the first down and keep fighting. You just need all you need is
a field. I want to throw for a diving catch 35 yards downfield.
Exactly.
Third and three.
Exactly.
So what do you do?
Throw for the diving down the sideline, go for the home run. Now it's fourth and three. You have to get the pass off. You know Auburn's going to come. You quick slant in. You step up in the pocket and get the pass off. Toles tries to roll out and doesn't even try to throw. He cuts it up and dives down to the ground. Throw the ball at least. But the play calling sequence there was absolutely horrendous. You play to get that field goal there. You're at home. Now, if you're on the road, going for the end zone, a little bit different. But on the at home. You play, get your first down. You've got a great field goal kicker, tie the game up, and then play for overtime.
Hey Jay, what's Kentucky's favorite sideline cheer in football?
I don't know.
Wait till basketball.
Oh.
Wait till basketball.
It may come up in tweets of the week.
Oh.
Yeah, you're ready for that, right? Shut up. You're ready for basketball.
Oh my God, Calipari.
I tweeted something like that, and.
Calipari got interviewed on the sideline of that game, and I wanted to throw up.
You know, here's the deal about Kentucky football. Teams tend to get well when they play Kentucky. Yes, Auburn.
Kentucky tends to get bad every week.
Nah, I mean, I really do think there's some psychology going on where, like, a team like Auburn, they're looking at this game as an opportunity. The staff, the players, they go into that game thinking this is a winnable game. This is our game plan. We're going to run it. We're going to throw it. We're going to fix our defense. And there's a mindset there that tends to work. Teams get well against Kentucky. I was telling someone in a meeting earlier today, Kentucky, to win a game like that, has to play good enough to win plus 20%, whatever that is. Playing good enough to win doesn't win that game for the Cats. They have to play that well plus something else.
Well, and they dug themselves a huge hole at half. You know, in the first half, I mean, the score wasn't that bad, but at one point coming out to start the second half, it was 23-10. I mean, they dug themselves a hole. Good for them to score 17. They went on a 17-7 run, but still, you are at home. These are games that if you want to call yourself the second best team in the East, as they were ranked going into last weekend. That's it. You have to beat the worst-ranked team in the West. You have to do that. At home, on a Thursday night, you have to do that. There's no excuse. They were statistically top to bottom the worst team in the SEC, the backup quarterback. You cannot leave it to bad. You can't lose that game on poor play calling. If they have good play calling and they miss a field goal to tie the game, okay. Different. Or they lose it in overtime, I can live with that a little better. But not to even have a chance to tie it at home when you hit on that last drive. I mean, they literally just stormed down the field, and then it stopped on stupid play calling. It's ridiculous. And Toles will literally on one drive or for a few plays in a row look like an NFL style quarterback. Man, this guy can play at the next level. Then the next decision he makes or the next drive, I mean, it looks absolutely horrible.
I think that's why he's at Kentucky. He loses his mind from time to time. Yeah. He's second in the league in interceptions. He's tied with Jeremy Johnson and actually Coker. He's got 6 INTs.
Well, and we shouldn't even count Jimmy Johnson because he's not even playing anymore, so it should be Toles and Coker leading the league.
He hasn't played in 2 weeks, and he's still got second in the league in INTs.
Yeah.
Auburn 30, Kentucky 27. Yeah, that was a tough one. And there's a lot of Kentucky, a lot of BBNs out there saying the same thing producer Jeff just said about basketball season.
Which, honestly, as mad as I – that's the most angry I've been after a Kentucky football game in a long time, because I really felt if we win that game, mm-hmm. we could have a legit shot.
See, what would have happened if we'd have won that game?
But Kentucky fans that were on the Kentucky bandwagon all week long, as soon as Kentucky loses, I'm back to basketball. Like, Kentucky fans are just so fair weather and so fake when it comes to football. They get all hyped, talk all this stuff during the summer, during the fall when Kentucky's doing good. As soon as they lose a game that they're supposed to win, I'm ready for basketball. That gets old. I mean, either be a fan or don't be a fan. I hate that.
You know, their two wins were against South Carolina and Missouri. That's not exactly resume making right now. South Carolina is at the bottom defensively in both passing and rushing. So, not a lot to hang your hat on. Auburn maybe would have been, definitely should have been, but wasn't. Ole Miss at Memphis. Paxton Lynch is the real deal. How tall is he? It's like, is he like 6'10"? 6'7"?
Looks like a giant.
Paxton Lynch, 39 of 53 for 384 yards. So, I mean, he's legitimate. I heard someone is a former NFL player, I can't think of his name, is on the radio, and he was asked who the top quarterback prospect was in the nation, and he said this guy. But that's no excuse here. Ole Miss needs to beat Memphis at Memphis. And Memphis, they cracked the top 25 this year, I mean, last week. So, I mean, they're not shabby. But Ole Miss was a team that I thought would challenge for the West in our preseason picks, and I wasn't alone. They will get the win in Tuscaloosa. They're on the verge of the wheels coming off. So,
well, I mean, I think it just speaks more volumes to the fact that the Alabama-Ole Miss game was definitely a fluke. Ole Miss just, I mean, to go in and just get manhandled by Florida, lose to Memphis, I mean, it's just, I mean,
they host Texas A&M this week. I mean, which could get rough.
Which, well, I don't know. That could end up being just a heck of a game, because I wasn't impressed with Ole Miss at the Alabama game. We talked about that. I haven't been overly impressed with A&M, although I have been impressed in the fact that, you know, they did get handled by Alabama pretty well, but they've at least played steady competition as far as being all FBS opponents all season long. I wouldn't be surprised if Ole Miss loses another game.
Vandy at South Carolina. This is the first game in the post Spurrier era, if I'm not mistaken. Vandy goes down 19-10 in Columbia. So Vandy may be the worst team in the league after all, because South Carolina is coachless and struggling.
I heard a lot of people on the local radio this week talking about just how disappointed they were in their Commodores, and they need to have a quarterback change.
I mean, it's a lot like Kentucky. You still gotta win the game.
And guys, you are still Vanderbilt with Derek Mason as your head coach, and you have a quarterback that is not experienced, and you have South Carolina playing with this nothing to lose mentality that they, you know, Spurrier leaves, and they've got this fired up interim coach. I mean, that's just you never want to play a team that just got done firing, or the coach either got fired or the coach retired. I mean, that's just a tough environment to play in. I don't know, it's again Vanderbilt. I think the defense, I think they have a really nice defense. They just don't really have a lot on offense.
They've got Missouri this week. They've got a shot at another win, but Missouri's defense is really good.
That could be another 6-3, 9-6 affair.
My advice is just stay away from that game.
Yeah.
Moving on to Florida at LSU. This game did not go according to script, I didn't think. LSU wins 35-28. Fournette is averaging 204 yards a game at this point in the season. Florida playing at LSU with all the things that have been going on with their program, it surprised me that they were in this game so late.
Well, LSU dominated that game early. Florida had a nice comeback. I heard a lot of people on game day saying that, you know, there's not really that big of a difference between Will Grier and Treyon Harris as far as there being a huge drop off. You know, I think people said that even if they had Will, I even said if they had Will Grier, I don't think they were going to go into Baton Rouge and win the game. LSU got up on Florida. Florida did make a nice comeback. Les Miles, I mean, the Mad Hatter, the fake field goal. I mean, just,
those plays are masterpieces.
I just love him. I love his play. But again, he always, when he gets a lead, the middle of the game, he just stalls. It's like, let's run it straight up the middle every single time. Where early in the game, they're getting Fournette outside. They're pitching it to him. They're doing all kinds of different things with Fournette. And Brandon Harris, I don't care what anybody says. That kid can play with this team. Now, I'm not
need a lot from him.
No, but he gives you plenty for this LSU team. LSU Florida's defense is one of the top rated defenses in the conference and in the country. LSU got a lot of yards on them and they put up 35 on them. I'm telling you, right now it's hard to imagine somebody beating LSU the way that they're playing now. Their defense gave up a little bit more than I thought that they would against Florida. But I mean, I right now it is literally Alabama and LSU, and then the rest of the conference, I think. And in Florida, I mean, I saw people picking it there to be a rematch between Florida and LSU for the SEC championship game, which very well may happen. So it'll be
right
interesting.
Now, well, where is the LSU Alabama game this year?
It's in Bama. It's in Tuscaloosa.
November 7th. Which doesn't really matter on that series, but that's still Alabama. Actually, doesn't play all that great at home.
Yeah,
get right down to it.
So it's November 7th. That's going to be an epic battle.
Well, it's 2 weeks. I think LSU gets the bye next week, and then
they both get a bye. They both have a bye because the year before Bama had a bye and LSU didn't, and they threw a stink. So now they both have byes going into that week, which is going to be just epic.
Florida's legit. That's what I know. Going into LSU and keeping it close against that defense with your quarterback. And you're right. And Will Grier's, I think we labeled him as maybe more than serviceable. But Jim McElwain, what a job. Treyon Harris coming in. Now, what people forget, Harris, he played a lot last year, right?
Yeah.
So Florida goes down in Baton Rouge 35-28. And Fournette continues his Heisman run, I believe. We believe here at SEC Spin. How about Missouri at Georgia? 6-9. Georgia wins by a field goal. Mizzou defense is really good. Sony Michel was the leading rusher with 87 yards in that game. Where have you gone, Nick Chubb?
If you would have told me last week that the score would have been 9-6 Georgia, I would have absolutely thought you were on drugs. It is really. I want to tread lightly here because I do like Mark Richt, and the interview with him about what he said to the kicker before he kicked that game winning field goal, that is beyond impressive and just speaks volumes about the kind of man that Mark Richt is. Just an absolute top notch guy. But at some point, and I touched on this the last couple of weeks, at some point. I'm not saying that Georgia could go out and get a better coach, but it's almost like maybe the time has just expired there. And it's not that it's bad. It's not that it's ugly, but it's just getting a little redundant to me. Year in and year out, Georgia is way up here in every expectation, and then they end up not there. It's not just like it happened this year and last year. I mean, it's almost every year, I feel like. I mean, except for the year that they lost to Alabama with Aaron Murray in the SEC championship game, was that 2012? Besides that, it just seems to be this every single year. And I love Mark Richt. And I actually, in the East, Georgia, I actually like Georgia. I don't dislike Georgia. I think they have a great tradition. I like watching them play. But this Grayson Lambert kid is not a bad. He's not a bad quarterback. They've got a slew full of running backs. They've got athletes at receiver. I know Mizzou has a good defense, but you should be able to put up more. You should be able to put up more than six and it not come down to a game-winning field goal if you're Georgia. You're Georgia. You are considered a football power. You should not put up 6 points against anybody.
That's at home.
I just, again, I'm not calling for Mark Rick's head. I'm not saying that at all. Just at some point, it's like when Tubby Smith was at Kentucky. He had good for what his system, decent recruiting for
That's
his system.
That's a really good comparison,
had,
I think.
Great guy, a wonderful human being. I mean, you never heard one person. He's never had a scandal. He's never had any problems. He's a family man. Everyone has said that, you know, I've met him several times. He is one of the most genuine, down-to-earth, nice people. I've never met Mark Rick, but I imagine him to be just like that. Tubby's time at Kentucky just expired. It just came to the point where it was like, you know what? We're kind of doing the same thing every year over and over again, and it's not bad. A lot of schools would take this in a heartbeat. Kentucky football would take Georgia football in a heartbeat, but the expectations are Georgia to be playing in an SEC championship game every year, not South Carolina for sure, not Mizzou for sure, and that's just all that's been happening lately. And that to me, that's where maybe a change needs to be made. And it doesn't mean that the coach you're going to bring in, like I said, is going to be better than Rick, but maybe just something new, something for the players to get excited about, the fan base to get excited about. Maybe it's time for Rick to go somewhere else. And in fact, I heard his name tossed around with the possible USC job, which I don't think he would take. But I heard that his name is out there for the top, one of the top candidates for the Miami job when Al Golden is let go. So that would be interesting. I think that's a little bit closer to home and kind of more, not that he's a Miami type guy, but that's not LA, you know, going to LA. So I don't know. And I'm not saying he would take either one of those jobs, but I think it would be interesting to see.
The thing about Rick, what you have to remember is, and there's a lot of coaches like this, granted, but in support of your position, this isn't an SEC East when your rivals are not as strong as they traditionally have been, particularly Tennessee and Florida, but even South Carolina, I mean, they really should not lose an SEC East game right now. And maybe even the West, I mean, they should be competitive in the West. They shouldn't have a loss at all right now, not Tennessee and not Alabama. They were favored against Alabama. But the reason that Rick is
or,
still...
Or at least if you lose Alabama respectively.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's right. That's right. I mean, a loss is a loss, but yeah. But I think we need to remind ourselves that were it not for a phenom freshman in 1980, Vince Dooley doesn't win a national championship. And that was when, you know, you didn't have... I don't think they had East and West when Dooley was coaching. I think it was just the Southeastern Conference.
Well, because the SEC at that time was not what it is today.
There maybe 10 teams.
Because there was still the Southwest American Conference or whatever it was that had Arkansas and Texas.
Yeah, SWC.
Yeah.
That's right. So Dooley was the venerable coach. You know, he was there for, I don't know, 28 years, 25 years. You got all those wins. That happened in that day. You could argue that Rick is, take away that national championship, which is huge. He won 3 straight SEC championships with Herschel. And I don't know that Dooley was not as good as Rick has been the rest of his non-Herschel Walker years. When you look at Georgia football, Rick has actually made them into what they are. They're, as a program, as a tradition, he has actually advanced that. Tubby didn't. So that's one of the big differences there. And then you've got what's going on at the University of Louisville, I dare say would never happen under Rick's watch. And if you're an AD these days, that's worth a lot. So you're right. And maybe one of those jobs, you're right, sometimes your time's just up. I don't know, just with the Georgia people that I'm talking to, they get mad at him, but I don't think they want him to go. I don't know. The Tubby situation was interesting that way. I didn't want Tubby to leave. I certainly wouldn't have fired him, but it didn't bother me when he did. It was a little more exciting. And then we got Gillespie. So be careful what you wish for, Dog Nation.
That was my thing with Kentucky fans is how bad they wanted Tubby gone because they didn't recruit his style, and he did recruit their style, and he proved that they didn't work. And then Kentucky fans got exactly what they deserved in Billy Gillespie for wishing that Tubby would get fired. So, but
you get what you deserve.
With Georgia and Rick, I have nothing but respect for him as a human and as a coach. I guess when things just continue to happen and it doesn't seem like it's getting better. I mean, when he had Matt Stafford and AJ Green, who are now Pro Bowlers in the NFL, and they still managed to lose games that they shouldn't lose. I mean, that's just and no Sean Marino was on that team too. I mean,
I know there's a running back.
Those guys were all at one point Pro Bowl players. I mean, it's just fascinating. I mean, but you can make that argument against Calipari and Kentucky for not winning. But at some point something's going to give, and I just would hate to see them. I would rather Rick leave on his own accord. I don't think he deserves to get fired. I just would like to see him maybe say, you know what, time for something new.
I don't think they're going to fire him. The Miami job would be tempting. Get down there.
ACC, you've got your recruiting ties.
Yep.
In the SEC, you bring back the U. That would be cool. I would pull for him hard at the U.
You wonder, you know, I don't know how old Rick is. I guess he's in his 50s. I mean, you get in a situation, in a building situation, do you really have that in you? I don't know, man. That's awfully big. But he might be up for a new challenge. You're listening to SEC Spin Radio with Jay and BD. All right, Jay, this week.
Would you want him to take the Michigan State job if it came open? Was he not good enough for Michigan State for you?
I'd want him to stay in the South. I want him to stay in the South.
You want somebody else coaching your precious Spartans?
My precious Spartans. I'm actually a Rick fan. I like him a lot. And I think he's a good coach. I mean, all the things you say are right. But, you know, you can't have it all. There's only a handful of coaches out there that can really pull that off. Give them the talent, they win national championships. Krzyzewski's won, and he's got, what, four? Of course, the tournament's different. He's got five. Oh, gosh. The tournament makes that harder, I think. So if you put him in a football environment, he may have – he's the Saban. So Saban's got, what, four? Three at Alabama and one at LSU? Is that right? Or does he just have three?
Then LSU in 2003.
And then who else has multiple? Does Miles have two?
Miles only has one.
It's hard.
Meyer has what?
He may have three.
Urban Meyer
has got two three. At Florida and one at. That's a shame.
Man.
That's just a shame.
That is.
But anyway, it's hard.
Yeah.
And so 10, 11 wins. You know, Spurrier, who's your guy, he's got just one, right? That 86 one? 96 one?
Yep.
86, 96. They all run together. It's a decade here, a decade there.
I was 1 and 11. So,
but Georgia, he's got Georgia every year in a position to do it. And while that sounds kind of like as a backhanded compliment, there is some truth to that. That every year, you're one of the handful of teams in college football that has a shot.
But okay, so in the last five seasons in the SEC East, Georgia has been picked in the top one or two preseason. In the last five,
yeah,
they've only played for an SEC championship one time. Two of those went to South Carolina. Two of those went to Mizzou. One of those teams was a newcomer to the conference. The other team is typically a doormat in the East, and that just cannot happen. That cannot happen. I mean, and shame on Florida, and shame on Tennessee too. I'm not holding them accountable. Well, they've had changes, yeah. And all the Rick has been the steady force at Georgia. But that I like him. I don't dislike him. I'm just saying that can't happen, man. I mean, think about it. Think about if Kentucky. Think about if in basketball, and just bear with me here. If in basketball, every year, which we are, pick to win or win the conference or play for the conference championship, if you want to put it that way, and we only played for an SEC tournament. I'm going to say tournament, SEC tournament championship. Say in 5 years, we only played for it one time. Kentucky fans would be mad. They would be going crazy, right? They've proven that. Okay, especially I can't imagine with Calipari what they would do if he only played for 1 in 5 years. I mean, he's their savior, but they would just be going nuts because they spend the money to do this and do that. I mean, that's what their world revolves around. And I mean, for Georgia fans, their Georgia football is whatever. I mean, they're buying tickets in Atlanta, their home state, years in advance, and then it just hasn't happened for them, and that's got to be frustrating.
That's just what fans do.
Yeah.
Fans get mad. Fans' expectations are not reasonable. If you're the athletic director, you don't fire Tubby Smith. You don't fire Mark Rick. That's what I think. You're listening to SEC Spin Radio. Jay, so I want to talk about defense for a couple of minutes. So what's interesting is to me is to see what the bottom, at the past couple of weeks, we've talked about some of the top fives. So bottom five defenses here against the rush and the pass. This was kind of interesting to me because you've got a couple of matchups coming up here in a minute where you've got some rushing teams and see how the defenses line up. You got Tennessee, Mississippi State, Kentucky, Ole Miss, Alabama all in action this week. LSU is off. Alabama is off, right? No, Alabama's got Tennessee. That's right.
LSU's playing this week.
Yeah, they've got Western Kentucky.
Yeah,
right?
they've got.
Well, Tennessee at Alabama, Mizzou at Vandy, Kentucky at Mississippi State, Auburn, Arkansas, Texas A&M at Ole Miss. So, bottom five rushing defenses in the Southeastern Conference. Starting at number 9, because 9 and 10 were exactly the same. Mississippi State, University of Tennessee, they've got Alabama this year, this week. So they're one of the worst teams against the run, and they've got to go to Tuscaloosa and try and tackle Derrick Henry for 60 minutes. University of Kentucky, Texas A&M, South Carolina, and Auburn. Auburn is the worst team against the run in the Southeastern Conference. Any thoughts on that?
They just make, again, like I said, Auburn being the statistically top to bottom, the worst team in the SEC going into last week against Kentucky. When it comes to Tennessee against the run, Tennessee, I think, has the talent there. They just don't tackle. Tennessee does not tackle well. And I'm not sure who's going to step up and try to tackle Derrick Henry. I know if I'm having trouble tackling, I'm not trying to learn this week to tackle Derrick Henry. I'm still going to do that arm tackle or slide at his feet and hope I trip him or something like that. I'm really not going to take a hit from him. As far as A&M goes, in Mississippi State, you kind of expect that. For me, I do. I mean, until Chavis gets thing. I mean, I think Chavis has done a great job, all things considered. And A&M and Auburn were the two worst defenses in the SEC West last year. And the fact that he's brought A&M significantly up, I've done arguably a better job than Muschamp has at Auburn, which everybody thought was going to be the saving grace. I am impressed with Chavis, but he needs a little time to get the run, and he will. I mean, look what he's done, where he's been. He's had one of the top rush defenses in the conference wherever he's been. They'll get there. Mississippi State, Dan Mullen, I mean, Mississippi State's just not a defensive team. I mean, think back to last year against Kentucky. I think they gave up 180 yards rushing or something like that to Kentucky, and then over 300. I mean, they gave up over 500 yards of offense to Kentucky last year. They outscored Kentucky, but Dan Mullen is not a defensive-minded guy, so that doesn't really surprise me. I think the two that stand out the most, obviously, Auburn with Will Muschamp. I mean, that's supposed to be – I mean, he's supposed to be the defensive guru, kind of like Malzahn's supposed to be the offensive guru. Tennessee, I think that's frustrating for Tennessee and their fans because, again, they have the talent there. Just not tackling well, and that's just something that you can definitely fix. Problem is, it's probably going to be next season before it's fixed.
Bottom five passing defenses in the Southeastern Conference. Last five, Ole Miss giving up 203 yards a game.
Which is surprising, because last year we talked about how great that Ole Miss defense was, and they really didn't lose much this year, and we thought this was going to be the year that they really come out, and you talking about their defense in our first talks this season about how great that defense was going to be, and I wasn't arguing that, but man, they really have kind of let down a little bit.
203 yards a game. I think they've had some injuries. Vanderbilt, 213 yards per game. South Carolina, there's a repeat, 220 yards a game through the air. University of Tennessee, next to last in passing defense, 248 yards per game through the air, and then Arkansas is last in passing defense.
Well, you know, as far as Tennessee goes, that passing doesn't really have a whole lot to do with tackling. I think that they are young at the corner and safety positions. Obviously, they are struggling late in games with their pass defense. They have played great defense in the first half against teams like Oklahoma and Florida. And then at the end of the game, they've just I think, what was it, the stat against with Will Grier? He went like 11 for 13 or something in the last quarter for like 160 yards. I mean, that doesn't help your stats at all. So late in the game, that's where they're struggling. South Carolina, you know, they're just – South Carolina doesn't really have a direction. And Spurrier walks away after six games. I mean, it's obvious that they just were not – they just don't have the personnel. And I think that's really all it comes down to. Ole Miss is the surprising one to me. Arkansas, you know, Arkansas to me is kind of going to be I think Bielema wants to try to shape his Arkansas Razorbacks after the LSU Tigers and the Alabama Crimson Tide. And that's a run. Except let's throw 100 short passes a game. And then let's have a great defense, but then let's give up everything passing. Bielema, to me, he's obviously not my favorite coach, but it's just amazing to me what their approach is. Like, you want to adopt somebody else's identity, but then you want to put your own kink on it, and it's not really working well. They have four losses already. Four losses. What were they ranked preseason?
13, 12.
Yeah, I mean in the low teens, and they have four losses already. I mean, it's just
at least they're good losses.
Oh yeah, fantastic. I mean, those are the ones that the committee.
Sarcasm.
The committee is really going to look at those
the
close.
Committee. Arkansas is not going to be looked at by the committee.
I think Bielema's time is getting short. If they don't have a drastic improvement by next season. He'll be out, and they'll be looking for somebody like Mark Richt, probably.
All right, you ready to spin it over to the matchups?
Let's do it.
Let's get the spin on this week's SEC matchups.
All right, it's a good segue there. So on the bottom five list on defenses, one of the two teams to appear on both of the lists was the University of Tennessee, who's going to be rolling into Tuscaloosa as a 15-point dog this Saturday. And that's interesting because they haven't lost a game by more than a touchdown yet. And well, that line actually moved. I think it started at 13.5, and it's moved to 14.5, and when I looked earlier today, it was up to 15.
Well, this is going to be the first week that they lose by more than a touchdown, I'm afraid. Bama is playing with a different passion than they were earlier in the season. And Kyle Allen, who is comparable to Josh Dobbs and a guy that is a runner and thrower, they beat him down last week and contained him. Josh Dobbs, although he had a fantastic game, against Georgia a couple weeks ago, last week I guess it was, wasn't it? 2 weeks ago. Excuse me. I do not see that happening against Alabama. Also, too, like we talked about, Coker is playing well, and Derrick Henry is a beast to me. With Nick Chubb out, he's obviously the second-best running back in the league behind Leonard Fournette, and he's really not that far behind Leonard Fournette, and he is a beast, hard to tackle. Tennessee struggles with tackling. I'm not going to say Bama beats them by 30 or anything like that. It wouldn't surprise me to see Bama cover the spread here.
Alabama's defense is number one against the run at 77 yards per game and number two against the pass. Alabama's defense just seems too much for UT, but the spread also seems out of line to me. So we'll see. Here's the deal. With the bye week and LSU coming up, could it be the proverbial trap game? That's the only thing the Vols have going for them. This is Alabama's eighth consecutive game. UT's coming off a bye. And then they've got the bye they're looking forward to, and then the SEC Super Bowl in 2 weeks.
No. No, the only way that happens is if Bama had to play LSU next week.
Or if Alabama doesn't show up. If they don't show up for the game.
Right. If they don't if they fly to Neyland or they fly to Knoxville instead.
They get the schedule wrong and they show up in Knoxville.
Yeah,
right.
No. If they had to play LSU next week, then we're talking a different ball game, but they know that they have a break after this. So whenever you know you have a break coming up, you push harder. You want to get the job done, and then boom, enjoy your break even more. They're not worried about that. And Nick Saban, too much of a perfectionist. He's not going to let them slip up against Tennessee. If this game was in Knoxville at Neyland, maybe a little bit different ball game, but coming to Tuscaloosa, there's no way.
Does Tennessee coming off that Georgia win mean anything?
No, because they honestly went on a 35-7 run. They were getting worked at one point.
Does the fact that Tennessee is the third best rushing team in the conference mean anything, and that they're both Alabama and Tennessee are 5th and 6th?
No.
In the SEC?
No, because it's Alabama. Alabama should be undefeated and should be the number one ranked team in the country right now.
There's not much argument there. I think the game has some intrigue. So
I'm going to watch it.
Yeah, we'll watch it.
I'm excited.
Tennessee is fun to watch. Josh Dobbs is a fun player to watch. And he's the X factor. He is the dual threat quarterback like Johnny Football. That's the type of player that gives Saban teams trouble. But Alabama's just got too much, and Tennessee is a little inconsistent. They just haven't shown that they can make that third down, fourth down play consistently when they need to, and it's just going to be harder against a team like Alabama.
Even if they get the lead, they haven't lost a lead to a team this good. So even if they get a lead, I mean, I fully expect Butch Jones and company to find a way to blow it away, and then once they do, it's over. I mean, Derrick Henry and Alabama are going to run it down their throat. I just don't have any doubt about this game.
Does Alabama cover?
I think Alabama covers the spread.
All right, next up, Texas A&M at Ole Miss. Ole Miss is a 6-point favorite here in a game that features two of the best receivers in the league, Christian Kirk and Laquon Treadwell, and two of the top three quarterbacks with Kyle Allen and Chad Kelly.
I'm going Ole Miss. I'm going to say that Ole Miss. I don't think they cover at 6. I think that Ole Miss wins late with the field goal. I think Ole Miss has to be coming back, fighting, knowing at home, hey, this is our season. If we somehow lose this game, and now have losses, a bad loss to Florida, a bad loss at Memphis. And then we lose to an A&M team that just got worked by Alabama. And now you, like you said, the wheels might be falling off at that point. But I have Kyle Allen can be contained. The A&M defense can be scored upon if used correctly. So this is going to come down to Hugh Freeze. If Hugh Freeze can figure it out, I'm going to give the edge to Ole Miss, but not by much.
Ole Miss is the number one passing team in the league. You want to guess who number two is?
A&M.
A&M is. And Ole Miss has one of the worst passing defenses in the league. These are the top two teams in total offense, but this is what I'm looking at. Ole Miss doesn't have the running game to control the ball and keep A&M off the field. And their defense is liable to stay on the field and get tired. And And Texas A&M is going to get to Chad Kelly probably like he hasn't gotten to. They lead the league in sacks. So I think it's going to be a lot closer than that. I want to go Ole Miss, but I'm tired of picking them. And the Memphis loss, I wonder where their psyche is. They've got the home field. They've got that going for them. There's a lot of people picking A&M. I don't think Ole Miss will cover. I agree with you. And I'm tempted to go with the Aggies here. In total defense, they're not good. But they're good where they need to beat Ole Miss.
If A&M won the game, I'm not going to be shocked. No. I just think that
not after they lost to Memphis.
I want to believe that Ole Miss had some really come to Jesus moments on the way back from Memphis, because that's an embarrassing loss. I don't care if Memphis is undefeated. I don't care about how good their quarterback is. That's embarrassing. You were at one point a top five team in the country this year, right? Weren't they top five? Top 10 at least.
Did they not make number two after they beat Alabama? They were top three. They were top five.
I think that Ole Miss has got to have, if they have any dignity and pride, they've got to come out ready to play and they've got to win this game. If they don't, Ole Miss's season, I mean, it's over. I mean, there's no way. You're not going to bounce back to even come close to LSU or Alabama.
Kentucky at Mississippi State. Tolles is one. Well, I've already told you that. There's only one quarterback that has more interceptions. Tolles and Prescott are both in the middle of the SEC QB pack. Both have 8 touchdowns. Prescott has no interceptions. You want to guess who the other one is that doesn't have any interceptions? One guess.
Treon Harris.
Brandon Harris. Treon Harris. Yeah, you're right. Treon Harris may not have any interceptions. Brandon Harris does not.
And yeah, I think it's impressive.
Yeah, you don't need anybody telling you that.
Again, think back to that 2011 LSU team. Think back to them. Okay, so on paper, Kentucky matches up with Mississippi State very well from an offensive standpoint.
Heart music.
But I'm not even going to pick Kentucky. My heart wants to. Everything I look at on paper wants to. There's no reason Kentucky shouldn't go in there and win that game. But guess what? They're going to find a freaking way to blow it like they always do. And we're going to come back and we're going to have all this set up to play Tennessee. And we're going to lose that game too. So Kentucky goes into Starkville and they lose again.
This game features two of the worst teams against the run in the league. The Bulldogs are number three in passing defense, so if Kentucky can't run it and Mississippi State shuts down the pass, they're playing at home. We forget Mississippi State is pretty good. I mean, we picked them. I think you and I both picked them last in the West, but we laughed about that because it had to be somebody, and it's going to be a team that was good. It's not going to be Mississippi State. It's probably going to be Arkansas and maybe even Ole Miss. It's not going to be Mississippi State.
Can't count out Auburn.
You can't. That's right. I forget about Auburn over there. I don't see Kentucky winning this game. What happens? How many people are going to start talking about basketball after they drop this to Mississippi State?
I'm getting off Twitter.
UK gives up 197 yards per game versus opposing quarterbacks. Prescott is liable to throw for 300.
Yeah, I was going to say, we're liable to give up 400 yards to Prescott overall.
To Prescott, yeah. Three touchdowns, 400 total yards. It's one of those 320 and 105 kind of afternoons.
But honestly, that's really all that they have on offense, but that's really all they need on offense.
Well, especially when you've got the dual threat. Auburn and Arkansas. Arkansas is a six-point favorite in this game. Good for them. Auburn is 12th in total defense. Arkansas is 9th. Arkansas is kind of in a must-win situation, coming off a bye week. Sean White playing well, but Arkansas is balanced offensively and probably better on defense. Auburn's coming off that win against Kentucky. I think a win against Kentucky is a little misleading right now. That's what I think. I think Auburn is going to come into this game thinking that they've figured something out. And I don't think it's going to go that way. That's my take.
No, I mean, Auburn is still Auburn. I don't think that because you went in and you beat Kentucky on the road and Kentucky completely just pooped the bed, if you want to put it that way. I don't see Auburn winning the game, and that's as bad as Arkansas is. But Arkansas also went into Knoxville and beat Tennessee at Tennessee. Arkansas has the talent there. I really don't know what Auburn has. I mean, I really don't. I mean, I know that they do have some talented players, but I mean they just don't seem to have things figured out. Arkansas seems to have figured at least a couple things out. I don't know. I mean,
Arkansas won at Neyland, right?
At Neyland, yeah. And they're coming off a bye, I'm mm-hmm. pretty sure.
Yeah.
So this is gonna be one of those things where I really think Arkansas wins more on the fact that they came off that win at Neyland, have a ton of confidence going into the bye week. They've had a lot of time to sit and watch Auburn. They watched Auburn play Kentucky. I think that Arkansas wins this game. I cannot stand Bielema, but I really do think that the Arkansas gets.
You've been wearing Bielema out this year. Well, Bielema and Rick, they're on your exile island.
Well, at least I respect Rick. I don't even respect Bielema. I mean, he just runs his mouth for no reason.
Can you believe, though, that a Gus Malzahn offense is near the bottom of the Southeastern Conference, which is not really strong league this year?
Well, that's been my argument the whole time. I mean, something is drastically wrong at Auburn because, okay, Muschamp didn't have the defense figured out his first year there. Totally buy that. That's fine. That's completely acceptable and understandable. There's no reason that Malzahn doesn't have the offense. I mean, that's his whole thing. My gosh, he almost won a national championship with Nick Marshall at quarterback. Nick Marshall is playing defensive back in the NFL. I mean, he's not even a quarterback. So to say that you, and the comparisons to Jeremy Johnson being the next Cam Newton. And you know, I mean, Kentucky made Sean White look like a Heisman Trophy candidate, but up till that point, Sean White didn't look that good at all. So I really – and Auburn didn't even seem to have an offensive identity. I mean, they, under Malzahn –
which is a crazy idea for a team that is all about offensive identity.
Exactly. I mean, the spread – draw. I mean,
it's usually fun to watch, even for a non-Auburn fan.
Right. I mean, yeah.
Real intricates, timing, and they're always synced up. Not last, but they're near the bottom in the Southeastern Conference.
Well, they were until they played Kentucky.
That's right.
Yeah, they were. They were actually dead last.
You get healed.
I'm sorry.
Like I said, it's healing. Lexington is healing.
Yeah.
It's good medicine.
At least they have Keeneland this month.
You think Arkansas covers? Oh, it's the fall meet up there, isn't it?
It's the fall meet. Breeders' Cup is next weekend.
Oh, the Breeders' Cup is in Lexington.
I think Arkansas covers, yes.
Mizzou at Vandy. What do you want to guess? Who?
6-0 Mizzou. 6-0 Mizzou.
What do you want to guess Vegas has this at?
2.5 Mizzou.
Man, you got it.
Really?
Actually, it's 3.
Oh.
Yeah. Missouri at Vanderbilt. My only note here is if you like offense, stay away. Missouri weaknesses.
If you like football, stay away.
Missouri weaknesses seem to play to Vanderbilt's strength. Missouri's last in the league in total offense, but they're number 2 in total defense. And they have played well defensively against some pretty good teams. So it's going to be low scoring, but Missouri wins. They may not cover that 3 points. I think this game goes like 14-10.
Ooh, you gonna go that much?
Maybe 17-10, maybe 17-6.
I don't think any touchdowns are scored in this game. I'm literally gonna go 6-0 Mizzou.
You're going 6-0. You're going baseball on us.
Yep.
All right, that's gonna do it for SEC Spin matchups this week. Jay, what do you say we look at some tweets of the week?
And now it's time for the SEC Spin Radio tweets of the week.
Mine have a definite theme to them.
Okay.
First up, this is Kentucky Sports Radio. Matt Jones at KY Sports Radio. Kentucky football fandom is a test of character. We got to say, we've already worn that out. But I've been watching it for years. I'm just numb to it now. But I still, it's like Charlie Brown trying to kick that football. Third quarter, I'm watching this game, thinking, man, we could win this game in every single time. Unless it's Missouri, the occasional South Carolina. The once in every 30 years Tennessee game, can't make it happen.
Yeah, from Kyle Tucker at Kyle_Tucker_CJ, Kentucky's junior quarterback continues to be a frustrating blend of NFL caliber throws and what was that?
I like that. Yeah. Did he hashtag what was that?
No, he didn't. I wish he would have.
Yeah, you need a hashtag for that one. Well, I've got one. This is from at MikeBBN. This is my theme. Tiles has to be the most volatile QB in UK's history.
That is...
Say it. Say it. Don't be scared. Say it. Go on record. Say it. What Matt
that
Jay
is
thinking right
that
now
is strong.
Those are big words.
Those are strong words, pal. Strong words. I remember a guy named Jared Lorenzen. Easy there, pal. From Peter Burns at Peter Burns ESPN. What I learned in the first half... I'm not sure if there is anyone in the country that can beat Alabama other than Alabama.
Which, that's a good way to position that Ole Miss game.
Yep.
This one's Toby Hendricks at HitRun7. And Toby retweeted Jalen Lorenzen, your guy. Anyone see that new trailer out for some movie with a question mark? He's got a Star Wars t-shirt. That was during the UK game. And the reason that's important is because he's a former UK quarterback, a big one. And he's one of the volatile ones. Tweeting about the Star Wars t-shirt during the Kentucky game.
I've got a one here from Mark Enos at Mark Enos. McElwain just got baptized. You're not really an SEC coach until Les Miles gets you with a fake field goal. I thought that was good.
That's right. Yeah. You know, he needs a t-shirt. I got faked by Les.
Yeah. We should make those. That should be our SEC Spin Radio t-shirts.
We've been thinking about what our theme would be.
I got faked by Les.
Which we got close to it because we were in the press room with him last December.
That's right.
We could say that.
Yeah.
And we almost got in the locker room.
We almost got faked by Fournette, too. My next one from Ryan McGee at ESPN McGee. So for those of you who don't know, a little backstory here. Tom Cruise is filming a movie in New Orleans. He was at the LSU-Florida game. Tom Cruise is all like, I want to play the Sus Miles guy. He does all his own stunts, too.
Last one from me is at UK Sports Chick. Excuse me, UK Sports Chick at UK Sports All Day. All day I've looked forward to relaxing and watching this football game. I don't think the relaxing part is going to happen. Hashtag go Cats, hashtag BBN.
Yeah, cheers to that.
No relaxing.
My last one from BBN Drake at BBN Drake. UNC has fake classes. Syracuse is on probation. Louisville runs a brothel on campus. But Kentucky is ruining college basketball, right?
Right.
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 Well, that's going to wrap it up for us this week on Episode 8. You good with it?
I'm good.
We'll see you guys next week for Episode 9. We'll be talking about Tennessee, Alabama, and bringing you some other special segments. Thanks for being with us.
Drop the gun.